Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. 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 No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Spiritual Insights. Another wonderful segment is promised today as we speak with Robin A. Hannon, who is the author of Vision on Fire, A Venture into Lucid Dreaming. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Robin has followed a path of healing and ministry now for over 20 years. She is a non-denominational reverend ordained with Nova Kostria Interfaith Outreach Ministries and has a master's degree in divinity from Past Christian University. She's been officiating at weddings since the year 2000 and has had the honor of coordinating many successful weddings of all types and preferences. She's a Reiki master practitioner, and her accomplishments include starting a Reiki hospice program at Seasons Hospice under the auspices of Dr. Harold Bob. Robin has also volunteered her services at local hospitals, cancer wards, and nursing homes. Currently, she has her ongoing Reiki practice and now runs Abiding Love Congregation, a full wedding officiate service. So, join me in welcoming Robin to the show. Hi, Robin. I'm happy to have you on the air finally.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Congratulations on the book.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Well, I totally enjoyed it, and I'm excited to cover all that you put into the book. It covers a vast array of topics and experiences that you had. And I love the variety of it, but more importantly, I love the simplicity of it. And you really get everything across in a very poetic way. So it was a really enjoyable read. And I wanted to start basically at the beginning. You share in the book an array of stories about your own journey. You have beautiful messages from spirit. I totally love those. You also have stories with Native American themes, and I'm heavily into Native American culture, poetry, prayers, and, of course, your experiences with lucid dreaming and Reiki. So I wanted to jump right in with, this is the second edition of the work. How does it differ from the first? What would you like to say about the second edition that's about to come out?
Well, in the first edition, I had put it down as the Heart Song of Anekahi, and Anekahi is part of my name. But the issue was it didn't really speak to what this book was trying to get across, and nobody could pronounce the name. And recently I'd gone to a book signing, and I basically kind of corralled people and said, do me a favor, give me input. And the basic input was, you know, change the title. The title does not speak to what this book is. And perhaps the cover. The cover's fine, but it doesn't really say anything about this book. So I thought about it, I prayed about it, and I said, you know, there's a point in this. So I decided to change it to the current version, which is now Vision on Fire, A Venture into Lucid Dreaming, which speaks more to what this book actually is about. And then I created a new cover, which I just sent right now to Publish America. So we're sort of in the process of revamping the book. The book is basically going to be the same. I also moved some chapters around, did some editing, just basically kind of toned it so that people knew what this book was. So that's the difference between version one and version two. The basic things that are in the book will be similar. The spirit of the book is there. But I think this will make it clearer as to what this book is.
I agree, and I think you did a fantastic job on the cover, and it really captures the essence of lucid dreaming. And What in the beginning, no matter the changes that were necessary, what was your vision in pulling all this together? What was the impact you wanted it to have on the readers?
Well, for me, it was all about sharing this journey and this process, which for me has been so exciting and so mind-blowing and so life-changing. To be able to find answers and ideas like this, there were just moments of aha and wow. So, you know, this has been a lifelong process. This is not something that I started yesterday. But this, to me, people's hearts, and perhaps get them started on their own journey by looking at things through my eyes. Perhaps they could catch the excitement, the actual fire in my heart that was going on as I'm writing this, to see why this is important, to see what it could do for the reader. It was that excitement and that process. It was a very personal process, but yet one that I felt was important to get out. And that was my idea and thought as I'm getting this book out to people.
Well, you did a wonderful job with it. And I do think everybody listening will be inspired by the way you put it together. You have, I love that, I love your unique perspective in that you kind of look at your journey through the lucid dreaming experience and pull together the wisdom that helped you expand your awareness, raise your consciousness, and really embark on a journey of self-discovery and what's important about life. So it's, I think it's a very unique way to take the reader through different spiritual concepts, different experiences, and while you don't explain how to have a lucid dream, that's not the concept of the book. It just takes your lucid dreams and shows how your journey unfolded. I think it's a great, it's a great angle for the reader. Good job.
Thank you so much. And that's exactly what I wanted to do. So I'm glad that you were able to see that and that you can convey this, because that was the idea. And you were speaking briefly about being on a heavily Native bent. That is part of my journey. I am right now part of the Chickamauga tribe. I have had a lot of this coming through in my lifetime. I did more or less try to put it through in a way that it would speak to every culture. It's not just specific to one culture.
Sure.
My take has been based on coming from so many different portions of life and different views in my upbringing, and as well perhaps that in those influences, you will see those influences in my book.
It was beautiful. I love the stories and the prayers. Very rich in the spirituality of that culture and all cultures. So yes, definitely everybody will resonate with that. But let me go back to the beginning. Let's go back in time a little bit, okay? In the book, you describe your near-death experience as the pivotal moment that put you firmly on the path. I know it's been a lifelong process, but this really kind of woke you up. Tell us about your near-death experience. What happened to you?
Well, I had several surgeries, and this was a third surgery on my back. And what I remember is all of a sudden I'm looking over at these surgeons, and the Rhonda Little Turca was playing in the background, oddly enough. I guess they had some music playing.
Mozart?
Looking down, Rhonda Little Turca, it's a classical music piece
that they were
actually playing in the background.
Okay.
So I'm looking down at the scene, and I'm thinking, what's this? And I'm looking at this person on a table, and I'm thinking, huh? You know, and I look down, and it's myself, and I'm thinking, oh, this can't be good. And the next thing I know, I was talking with my grandfather. I was out of that scene, and I was talking with my grandfather. And I remember we spoke about everything. It was there was no sense of time. It was, what is my purpose in life? Why was I here? All the things that I needed to know in this instant of time, just everything. was very crystal clear. It's very hard to explain, but we had this long talk, and when we were done with this incredible talk about everything, he said a few things to me. One is, be who you are. Do not leave here and try to be anyone else but you. Because most of my life I've been spending the time trying to sort of fit in to everybody
yeah.
else's ideas, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And
I
said, no, you have to be you. You have to speak your voice and sing your song. And he was very firm about, you know, get out there and don't just hide in the shadows and try to be what everyone else would think you should be. There's no shoulds. You are you. So basically after that, he kind of sent me back, shall we say. And it was in this time frame of this just, I don't know what better word to say, download of
yes.
vast yes. knowledge. I and, you know, of course I don't remember all of it, but just incredible knowledge about all kinds of topics. And, you know, once I came back to this plane, there was a hunger and a desire, a fire that was not there to get this stuff out, stuff that I had journaled, and then stuff that came to me afterwards.
Yes.
That the lucid dreaming that came to me, the vast wealth of information in this book, it was coming without effort. It was like suddenly being downloaded into me,
yeah,
for lack of a better explanation. So that's kind
yeah.
of what happened.
It sounds like your awareness was heightened to such a degree so quickly because of the experience. But what I found interesting about your story, about the near-death experience, everybody's experience is what they need. And I've been reading a lot of people's accounts of near-death experiences, very fascinating, but also very unique to each person. And what I found interesting about yours was that when your grandfather said you had to go back, he took you to a roller coaster. And
yes.
you say that you were terrified of roller coasters and you refused to get in it.
Uh-huh.
But do you think, and when I look at that, I go, oh, that's perfect. Because do you think, would you agree with me, in that he took you to a roller coaster in a way to demonstrate, because when we're on that level and in that plane, having those experiences, there's multi-layers from what I've experienced. So he's saying certain things to you. Other things are being downloaded. But on a third level, it's like, here, get into this roller coaster. Face your fear and go
mm-hmm.
back.
Yep.
Do you feel that's appropriate?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure. Because and think about that when we talk about fears. Because think about what I just said previously. I was a kind of person that was somewhat fearful of what other people thought.
Yes.
So I tried to force myself this square peg into round holes everywhere I went, trying to be accepted. There was a fear that was always with me.
Yeah.
So perhaps in facing the greatest fear, which is getting in this roller coaster, and it wasn't just a roller coaster, it was a wooden roller coaster.
Oh.
so, you know,
it's
a lot of clickety-clackety, clickety, and, you know, boom, lots of energy going down, back, and it's very scary, very frightening. So perhaps it was, in a sense, facing all of my fears, you know, in this roller coaster, coming back into and being fearless, not
in
fearful.
Life.
Yes.
Right, in life itself.
Yes.
That's a beautiful experience. I'm happy that you had it. And so after the experience, of course, you had your surgery. Obviously, something went wrong on the operating table, but they got you back, and you
mm-hmm.
agreed to come back. And then what happened next? In your book, you recount experience of speaking to nature, to departed loved ones,
mm-hmm.
and you've had some deep connections to things that are not seen.
Mm-hmm.
And what? Give us an idea of how this kind of unfolded for you after the near death.
Well, it's hard to explain this, but even though I have come back, I felt as though I left a part of me behind.
Really?
And what I left behind was the fearful me. That part died.
Good.
And what came back was someone fearless, more afraid to look at these kinds of things. And I remember the first time I was recuperating I was home, and I had fallen asleep. And as I'm sleeping, I basically heard, "You're going to be getting lessons and visions in your dreams, and you will wake up and write them down." And I remember thinking, well, how am I going to get up? I mean, I'm dreaming. How am I going to get up? And the pattern started of, you will learn to lucid dream. You will be able to be asleep yet awake and get up and write these things. Mm. So I'm like, okay.
I'll believe it when I see it.
yeah, pretty much. I'll believe it when I see it. And the first actual time that this happened, it was about Mother Earth. There was a question of Mother Earth, which was, what's going on here with the planet's weather system? And that is in the dream, and you'll see that in the book.
I did.
And
very important.
I was able to more or less listen to what was being said, and I'm like, okay, I got to retain this. So I kind of sort of woke up, but I'm still kind of like not waking, and I'm writing this stuff frantically down as I'm being told it.
Yes.
And as things went on, I did learn techniques to help me with this, techniques of breathing, other techniques of getting into a good proper space so that I could be in both places at the same time.
Gotcha.
So it got easier as time went on. But I remember this first one and frantically saying, don't let me miss one word of this. Oh, my God, how am I going to be able to get this down and still be asleep and yet awake?
Right.
But the process was almost a very intuitive one. I didn't have to worry. And as I got more into it and things got easier for me, then I began to see this pattern of how to do this and how to, and actually the cover of the book was done exactly in that same place.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I am not good at graphic manipulation. I'm really not. Okay. So the fact that this is like this is part of that process, believe it or not. I couldn't even tell you how I did this.
Very
I just
cool.
Did it.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, you get into that. Into that space, whether you call it your third eye, your right brain, you're in there, and it's a place where you can relax and just let them do what they want to do through you. And it's as the more I learn to trust in the process, I don't have to worry about anything. I don't, you know. But you mentioned Mother Earth, and I think it's a very important topic, so I'd like to explore that for a few minutes. And the importance of, there's a message in the book where Mother Earth is basically conveying a message that you have damaged me and polluted me, and I have not turned my back on you. You have damaged me.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. Share the crucial message in what we're doing with the planet and why it's so important that we need to change the way we do things.
Well, what basically Mother Earth said to me is, the question was, Mother Earth, the entire planet is out of kilter in terms of the weather system. And the scope of this is frightening. And it feels like you're angry and lashing out. And the response was, you have it all wrong. I'm not lashing out. My body is responding to the damage you are doing. And basically what Mother Earth did is it gave an analogy. It said, look for a moment at the process of cancer. If you smoke, when you choose to smoke, your lungs are damaged by cancer-producing agents. And the body will respond, okay, because it wants to fight against this, and it produces these cancer cells, and this is immunity gone wild. It's the body's reaction to an unnatural and unhealthy product that shouldn't have been there to begin with.
Right.
Now, obviously, you can't say your body is going to hate you because it's doing this. It doesn't hate you. Is it lashing out? No. In essence, the body is trying to protect itself, but the mechanism has been damaged. So instead of protection, the body attacks and kills itself. And in the same manner, the Earth is responding. The body of the Earth is responding to the damage that has been done in this same way. And what Mother Earth said is, I can't control this response. And you're feeling the results. You can't poison water and the air you breathe and the ground you come from without consequences. And it's not because of anger. My body's a living thing. And you have made these choices, so this is the consequences. And people are asking me if this is reversible. But it is for now, but there may be a time when it will not be.
Mm-hmm.
And what Mother Earth is saying is, I've nurtured you, but I'm old and I'm feeble from continued abuse. And I'm sick
yes.
in body. I love you, but there's only so much I can take, basically.
Yeah.
So that is the crux of this particular message, which is that, you know, no, it's not a matter of anger. And I've had people get very insulted, you know. Yes, it is. Well, I can only tell
you.
No, it's
not.
I can only tell you what Mother told me, you know, which is no.
Take care of me so I can take care of you. It's like I am the body of the earth. In essence, I am your body. And so if you don't take care of the body, whichever one you speak of, it can't sustain you.
Exactly.
So obvious.
And this is that process in that particular section of, okay, we need to understand what this is about and really get it through to our minds and bodies and spirits. We are connected to our mother. And we
yes.
cannot expect that we can continue to do what we're doing and expect good results.
Right.
What is that saying about, you know,
doing the same
what is it about insanity?
The
insanity is doing
insanity.
The same thing and expecting different results.
Yes, exactly. It is insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, Mother Earth basically stated, you know, there will come a point where this is not reversible, but for now it is. So if everyone were to stop what they were doing, sit and think about this for a moment, and then commit to making better choices for the planet, it would take us to where you say in Chapter 2, there's a period of rebirth and renewal, and that's what we need to do in order to look at the planet differently and then make the appropriate decision. And I'd like to read a paragraph out of what you say in that section of rebirth and renewal, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You state, many are talking about a restoration, a new birth, or some sort of new order coming. What's happening in this restoration process and in this stage? What would, in your own words, what is that section about?
Well, basically, I think that you're seeing a dichotomy. What you're seeing is that there are people who are waking up to this,
mm-hmm.
to not only what's going on with Earth, but with their own souls. They're waking up as though from a long dream, and they're beginning to be conscious of this paradigm or this shift from being self-centered and self-absorbed to more absorbed with others and the universe and serving and being part of this process of something better and something new. On the other hand, part of this dichotomy is we've got people who are even going deeper into sleep. So we've got people that deny everything, and I say kiddingly, but there's some truth in it. They're living in Egypt in denial.
Yes.
And they are so deep asleep, there's no waking them. So it's interesting in this paradigm and in this shift. And there are different portions or time and space where we go through things. The most recent thing, for example, last year, we were in what we call the south of our wheel, the wheel of life.
Okay.
And in the south of this wheel of life, we were talking about being into snake medicine or shedding your skin, shedding the things that no longer serve you. So this paradigm is all about shedding these things that hold us down, that keep us from our full potentials, that keep us from a creator, from our fellow man, that keep us from moving in a more productive manner.
Okay.
So that was where we were. And it was, as I say, you know, if you watch a snake and it doesn't shed its skin, it will die. It suffocates. By the same token, our entire planet, everything about us has been whirling and intensifying and suffocating.
Yes.
So this has been a time recently of shedding some of the stuff that is making us suffocate. But we've got this dichotomy of people who are actually growing and doing this, and then people who are still very much asleep and do not want to wake up.
Yeah, it's very sad, but it is their choice.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Hmm.
But, you know, the basic thing is to understand that in this dichotomy, everything is going to plan. This is going to plan. It may not seem like it, and it may be scary, but believe it or not, there is an order in all this. And nothing about rebirth is easy. If you've ever seen a woman give birth, you know it's not easy.
Good Lord,
rebirth,
no.
Right. Rebirth and renewal is pain. It's facing the deepest and darkest and the worst part of ourselves in order to move forward. And not everybody is willing to do this, which is why some people remain asleep.
Yes, exactly. I say to my students, and when I'm giving a lecture, while we're on this planet, we must grow, we must transform, we must purify, and that's just a part of spiritual growth. But there is no instance of growth in this dimension that is not accompanied by some level of discomfort. And I think it's just that if we're all in the process of waking up, then it's my hope and my prayer that everybody then recognizes the importance of the pain, because it signifies that you are going through a transformation, you are growing, and if you can open your eyes to this, you can go through that with awareness, knowing that on the other side, whether you use the visual of a snake shedding its skin and then coming out with much more room to grow, because you explained to me that it constricts the snake, and if it doesn't shed, as painful as that process is, it will suffocate or die. But if we don't want to suffocate spiritually, then we must be willing to go through these changes, no matter how painful, with awareness.
Right. Absolutely. You got it.
Yeah. But I like the way this section of your book really puts it, especially from the Mother Earth perspective, and that the way you put it is really very clear, very simple. But I'll tell you what I'd like to do is go to a commercial break, and when we come back, I want to talk more about spiral journeys and how to enhance your experience of being alive, okay?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll be right back right after these messages.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Explore new areas of interest, expand your knowledge, and gain clarity about your life's purpose at the Ocala Intercenter. Affectionately known as OIC, the Ocala Inner Center, just 2 blocks south of Town Square, offers workshops, classes, healing meditations, and special events for the Ocala, Gainesville, and Central Florida spiritual community. Check out our calendar of events at ocalaintercenter.com. And if you're looking for a place for your next workshop or seminar, go to ocalaintercenter.com and give Gene a call.
Hello, everybody, and we're back with Robin A. Hannon, author of the book Vision on Fire, A Venture into Lucid Dreaming. So, Robin, before the break, we mentioned we're going to talk a bit about how to enhance our experience of being alive. You have some really practical tips to offer the listeners. But first, on page 19, there is a very special message in the book. Would you mind if we read that?
Okay, I got to go find it.
Oh, is that what you're doing? I heard the page.
Yes, I know.
Okay.
The message was actually in reference to this process that we were talking about rebirth and renewal.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And there was a woman who actually channels a person named Martin. And she runs something called Soul Source in Durwood, Maryland. And what she said was just the synchronicity was incredible. And I had to put this down, and I did get her permission. But basically it says, we are pleased to announce that the energies that came in December are starting to take root and they're beginning to ground. And as a result, many of you have found what you're expecting is a bit different than what you are experiencing. So basically, first and foremost, to say this is happening by design, there are no accidents and nothing is amiss, which is what I was saying previously about this. It's simply
right.
part of the process.
Gotcha.
So let us be clear, whether you are making a transition that is grand and significant, as in this particular transition, or you may be experiencing something that's being birthed. And, you know, I'm sort of going through what she said. There are things that must be cleared out, so you may be experiencing some dramatic events that ego would interpret as negative,
mm-hmm.
but it is not. It is clearing, and it must take place. So when you are in this transition, we use the metaphor of the birth canal. And those who have given birth understand it's not a smooth or simple process. Gee, where have I heard this before?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically it says, and those of you who have not given birth have perhaps witnessed this and said, boy, I'm glad it's her and not me.
Mm.
So you understand that we are going through this process and all is going according to plan. Many have been disillusioned and discouraged because they were feeling they're supposed to wake up on December 22nd and have this golden age just magically appear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a goal, to have the golden age appear, but it takes time. And remember, birth brings great reward. I just love that. I thought, wow. Yeah.
It's just terrific.
So much. Yeah.
Yeah. And what this does, folks, what this is referring to is the ascension on December 21st, 2012. This was given to you on January 16th, 2013, and yet it mirrors a message that you received in May of 2012, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So the message was almost a year later, but the synchronicity was remarkable, and I said, wow, that's awesome. To me, that was such a validation that I am hearing what I need to hear. I'm putting down what I know Creator is telling me.
Right.
This is not just something I'm making up. This couldn't be. It's just too much synchronicity.
No, and when you read a message like this and you get the energy from the words, you can tell it's authentic. And I wouldn't bring it up and want you to read it out loud if I didn't feel it was authentic. And this is, I can just look at the energy. This is beautiful, especially, you know, I felt that, everybody did the whole end of the world thing for December 21st, and I try to tune out that type of nonsense, but I really felt that what we would experience would be rather anticlimactic, like almost feel like nothing, and yet on deep, subtle levels, even leading up to the time, and I've been saying it for years that, you know, once we get there, you better start unloading the baggage, because once you step over that threshold, whatever suitcases you're clinging to because you simply don't want to forgive or let it go, you're going to have a bumpy ride.
Exactly.
So back in 2008, I was telling people, you better start forgiving. You better, you know, do a life review and look at everything that's holding you back, pulling you down, whatever is impeding your spiritual progress. You really need to look at it and decide what you're going to do before you carry that with you, because I think it would have been easier to let go of before that paradigm shift than it is after. Maybe it's easier for some other people, but this was the caution I was throwing out there to all of my students, and I love this message. And since I threw out the word forgiveness, first I wanted to talk about your suggestions for how to enhance your experience of being alive, the spiral journey, which is an important concept to understand, and journey to infinity. What would you like to tell us for a minute or two about those things?
Well, actually, these things happened when I was in a class. There was a class on journey work that I had attended, and I absolutely love these kinds of classes because the energy is so wonderful and so much easier to hear and to get into this space. And the question was, we want you to try to journey to these things, journey to a spiral, journey to infinity, and what does it mean to be alive? And this is what came to me in this class.
Okay.
So that's how these things came about.
Okay, perfect. And I love what you say on page 28 about forgiving and the message you receive from Spirit about hiding your light.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us your thoughts, because I really like what you wrote about it. What are your thoughts on what forgiveness is and what it's not? And that's page 28.
Okay, well, basically, in terms of forgiveness, what forgiveness is not is pretending like nothing ever happened. It's not as though you're going to say, that person didn't hurt me, that thing didn't hurt me. You know, we all have our scars. Those are real. But what you can do is make a real decision to forgive in spite of whatever scars you have. And that means you basically decide cold-bloodedly, I am going to let go of the pain that this has caused. I am going to sit and let this thing heal itself, not because that thing was right. There is justice. We all need our justice. Okay, everybody wants it.
Yes.
But this is a greater concept, which is that when our need for justice hurts our spirit and leaves those scars open and bleeding, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Forgiveness makes it easier for us to be more spiritual human beings, but it is not in our nature. Okay? So when we deal with forgiving, we have to consider that our wounds are like there for people to actually stomp on. And I said this in forgiving. You know, have you ever noticed if you know you hurt a part of your body and somebody slams it? It's like if people are drawn to it and they
stomp. It's like a magnet.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
I was laughing the whole time I read that. I was like, oh, my God, you were so right. Like, I was aware of it because I had an injury to my neck, and I'm not tall by any definition. And it kind of put me at a point where if I went to a nightclub when I was in my, 21 years old, people would walk by and go to turn, and their elbow would go straight into my neck.
There you go.
And you're right. So go ahead. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I was saying here is, all right, you have a choice. You can continue to not forgive. That person did it, and I have a right to not forgive. Yeah, you do have that right.
You do.
But you're going to have people sticking their elbows into that sore.
Uh-huh.
Constantly.
I like how you say that one person broke a toe, and of course everybody and their mother stepped on the toe.
Exactly.
And
so, you know,
do
you want the toe to heal or not? And who are you hurting if you leave your toe broken, or worse, continue to break it? Who are you hurting? Are you hurting
yourself?
The person that did it? Exactly.
Yep. Only yourself.
So I said, when we make a decision, that sets this healing in motion when we decide to forgive. And it's not about what our rights are. It's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy.
No.
This is really hard. And there are people who will still take this and cling to their anger because they feel justified in it.
Absolutely.
But, you know, my point in forgiveness is if you want to move forward, as difficult it is to let go, this is actually another process of shedding that skin that is constricting you. It is the chains that are holding you down. And something that was said here is, children, you've all had your share of pain and things that have, in effect, shut you down and shut your hearts down. And I've heard this so many times, it's just easier to keep my distance. If I don't reach out in love and friendship, I can't be disappointed and I can't be hurt. And I said, okay, do you really want to take the love that Spirit has given you and hide it in a dark cave or under a barrel out of fear? Do you not trust the universe in its undying love for you to repair any wounds and to dry any tears? And if you hide your light, who's going to be there to light the way for others? If you allow your fear to block you, who will be left to show others where to go? Will the darkness then not win? It takes just a little bit of light to chase away a darkness. And where there's absolute darkness, no light can live. And where there's absolute life, light, no darkness can go. So are you going to choose? And are you going to choose to live the light or be the light? And that is part of this forgiveness message right here. Not an easy message to hear.
No,
it is not forgetting. It is not condoning. It is not absolution. It is not self-sacrifice. It is not plastering a smile on your face. And it is not weakness. It's a form of realism to forgive. It is a sign of positive self-esteem. It is letting go of the past, and it is moving forward.
Absolutely. It's liberation. It's salvation. It's for you. It's not for the offender. It's for you to be free of the chains that bind.
Exactly.
So that was beautiful, and I'd like to add to it. I love how you say this, and your love of poetry lends an elegance to your style of writing that I really appreciate it. I'd like to read a paragraph from the section entitled Earthly Agreements, because it really supports all that you just read. I love that message. And in this paragraph, you write, and this is coming from you, I've had victories and failures, but at least I have the knowledge of knowing I've used my free will to do that which is not only pleasing to spirit, but ultimately will enhance my own walk and growth. One light chases away darkness. Take the deepest darkness or the utter depth of blackness and light a small light, and lo and behold, it consumes the darkness. This is our job, our contract, to light our lights and consume the darkness.
Right, and that's exactly what this whole book is trying to do, to bring
Beautiful.
Forth this experience of lucid dreaming as a way to light your light, as a way to start to get knowledge, to become someone who can light the path.
Absolutely. If not, then why are we here? If only to do that one thing. And I know people are having a hard time in various areas of their life, but I love what you say. In another section, you were sitting and talking with a friend, and she used the term sitting in the void, and it really struck you. Describe how your awareness expanded during that conversation with your friend.
Well, I was talking with her, and she said, this is a dichotomy within a physical being. We need to see both sides of an issue and that both sides are valid. Maybe one just needs to sit in the void between the two, and here they will come together. And what struck me was the comment, sitting in the void. And I thought, yeah, we're very diverse people, all of us, people who are spiritual. We have very many different personalities and ideas. But in spite of this, we're to be one spirit working together to sit in this void, as it were, fostering love, light, and tolerance. And how do we sit in this void without judgment? How do we create a place where we are the translators, the medium, the go-between, the facilitators?
Right.
And again, what came to me as I thought about this is it gets back to that same topic we've been discussing about how do we be this light? How do we leave our human frailties and our opinions that do not serve, our stereotypes, our hot buttons, our issues? If we're going to do this, how do we walk in this thing? When we are being used, if we become this empty vessel, then it's no longer us, but spirit. And
yeah.
Spirit loves imperfect vessels, because the more imperfect the vessel, the more it's clear it's spirit. So
huh.
Then spirit gets the glory, and it is the essence of the divine spark of spirit that we begin to channel every day. And what I tell people is, I'm very imperfect. I am completely an imperfect person. I am probably the most broken, put together, glued together vessel. But yet, because of that, and because I've allowed myself to be empty, that Creator can come in and use me for these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not an easy walk, because it's putting to death all the things that are human that we do every day. Things that are negative, self-serving, self-justifying, walking in hope and in faith despite whatever you see. Now, that doesn't mean you don't acknowledge bad things. I mean, what you don't want to do is walk around saying everything's wonderful when it's not. But you can approach something with the idea of, this may not look good, but I'm going to have the faith that I can get through whatever this is. One step at a time.
And be present in the moment.
And be present in the moment.
Without going off into a daydream where there's something different happening, which is impossible, and you're wasting your prana or life force energy doing that. That's a bad habit to have. And you're not hiding your head in the sand. Be present and say, you know what? Okay, this isn't preferable. But change is constant, and I trust that process, so I will be patient.
And one of the things I say about head in the sand is that when you stick your head in the sand, your rear end is up in the sky for something to kick.
Oh, my goodness. That's a good way to put it.
It's never good to put your head in the sand because you don't want your rear end to be kicked.
No.
So, we have to acknowledge what's going on in our lives, but we don't have to get pulled into the mire with it. When we walk through our valleys and our times of difficulty, it's at that point we just say, one step at a time. There will be an end. There will be a light. I'm thinking of a friend of mine who has been quite seriously ill. This poor man, don't ask. Everything's wrong with him at the same time. They found leukemia. Then they found aggressive prostate. Then his heart and his lungs are enlarged. All these issues. But let me tell you something about this man. He walks with laughter. Not that he doesn't acknowledge what's going on. Of course he does. How can he not? But he's walking with laughter and with strength. And he's gone through the treatments that are quite nasty with the nasty side effects, and he's still using his humor. And he's getting stuff out there that he needs to get out there, and he's a strong person. And
wow.
I admire that.
Absolutely.
You know,
what an
here's
inspiration.
A man who's going through God knows what, and he's still strong.
And what's worse, the disease or the treatment? I mean, this poor man, and to carry a smile and share it with others, brownie points for him.
Really? So that's what I'm saying. He's not putting his head in the sand. He's doing what he has to do.
He is.
And let me tell you something. He has had a vision for his life. And he didn't think that vision would happen. I remember he called me and he said, "I'm so upset that I don't think I'm going to live for this vision to occur." And I remember saying, "We're going to pray and you watch." Well, long story short, I went to a powwow, and I was standing there with my friend who runs one of the booths, and this woman comes up to me, and she's interested in the topic that is this man's life work.
Okay.
So I put the two of them together. She's writing a book and using his life's work. So it's getting out there.
That's great.
Okay. So again, here was a moment where he said, oh my gosh, it will not happen. Yes, it will. This is too important. Your life work will get out there. And lo and behold, I happen to be in the right place at the right time to meet the right person to get her in touch with him. There's no coincidence, isn't there?
Perfectly natural. Perfectly natural. But that's the fun of it. You never know how it's going to come to you, so there's no point in trying to wonder or doubting it. Just be open to whatever way the universe conspires to get it to you. So I'd like to move on to another very important topic. A few minutes ago, you were talking about, you know, everyday life and the things we experience and some of the negativity we run into. And in your book, you address a very important topic, which was a gossip and being a light worker. And I think the gossip angle is something we should explore for the listeners. Very important.
Yes, it really is. And, you know, what I said is, first of all, I'm just going to tell you my own vision for this and my own thoughts. First of all, words are important. Your words manifest something. They create. How many children who have been teased have scars as adults because of words? It's not sticks and stones may break my bones and words will never harm me. Yes, they are harmful. They can harm. They can destroy. They can break down. So gossip is the worst form of this thing because, number one, most gossip is, I don't know if you've ever, as a child, have you ever played the game telephone? You get in a circle and you whisper something, and by the time it gets to the end of the circle, it's completely not what you said.
It's bigger and much worse.
Well, usually.
Yes.
So the problem with gossip is it's, number one, usually second or third hand information. It's usually unedifying. We can agree on this.
Yes.
And it's destructive.
Very.
And if you think about where does this resonate, where does it come from on our energy level, it's in the throat. It's in the throat chakra.
Yes.
This is where your energy, there are several energy points, and that one is a biggie. So when it gets affected in your throat chakra, there are many things that can come out of this on a physical level, not to mention the spiritual level. Physically, you might find your adrenal glands are affected, or your thyroid is, or
thyroid.
You get constant throat issues, or I don't know, esophageal issues.
Yeah. Laryngitis. People when they come down with laryngitis, and they tell me they don't know why they keep catching laryngitis, and I'm looking at them like, all you do is talk negative stuff about people. And
well,
you
that
know,
could
and
be a possibility.
Yes,
you
it
know,
is.
With, not without shame. I don't want to shame anybody. You know, but the fact remains is that what we say does have a physical effect. We can agree that it can.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the effect it has on others. Now, if you're going to be a light worker, you're going to do what we've been talking about this whole time, you have no business saying things that are not going to edify.
Yes.
So, you know, for me, if I'm in a place where I'm upset, I'm hurt, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, whatever, my human emotions, I'm human.
Sure.
Shut my mouth. Don't say anything until I can get to a place where I can say something good.
Right.
Simply because I don't want to hurt people and hurt myself. When we gossip, we pull ourselves down into the mud and muck.
Yes.
This is not healthy. It's not a good thing.
Not on any level.
Not on any level. So my feeling in this, what I was trying to get across here is watch what you're saying. Be careful because, we don't, you know, it's very easy to get caught up in, do you know what so-and-so said? Or do you know what I heard?
Guess what I heard, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And my
and
mother told me.
We all do it, but we have to understand what this can do.
Yes.
So my whole thing was just be aware.
Right.
If somebody comes to me and they say, you know, Joe said, my normal comment will be, look, Joe did not say blah, 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 to me. And unless I hear it directly from Joe, I cannot listen to this.
Yes.
Okay.
You have to kind of neutralize it.
Right. And
because here's what I think. Go ahead, and then I want to tell you what I think is going on. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I might say, if Joe wants to talk to me, let Joe come to me. I don't want to hear this from you.
Right.
Okay.
Because what we have to do is pull back with what I like to call, you know, like a detached awareness. Don't attach yourself to the perceived motives of what's happening here when someone comes to you and gossips about somebody else. And especially look at your reasons if you feel compelled to tell somebody else something that happened to you. Because what we're doing a lot of those times is trying to convince another person that we were the victim and recruit them into our story.
Right.
So and it's called recruiting. You know, guess what happened to me? Please validate and reinforce my perception as a victim so that I can prove myself right and I'm justified in saying whatever I want to say, regardless of my contribution to the situation. But this is very tricky terrain to navigate. And something my mother told me when I was younger really helped me in many social situations. And what she said was, never believe anything you hear and only half of what you see. And as I got older, I understood it more, of course, in my spiritual studies. But no matter what you see or hear, you don't know the full story. You can't determine that. you have to look at any situation through God's eyes. And in God's eyes, there's never any reason to really be spreading gossip or rumors or recruiting other people into a flawed perception of true events, you know? That's
exactly.
All I wanted to say.
And I want to read part of what I said here because I think it puts it in perspective here. I said, the person who is a victim of gossip is put in a completely untenable position. They can try to deny allegations, but such denial adds fuel to the fire.
Yes.
They can take the moral high ground and refuse to address the allegations, but then they are left with the loss of friends or acquaintances involved in the situation. There is no happy resolution to such a situation. As light workers, we're either going to channel light, healing, wellness, wholeness, or not. And the power of this is in our words and in our intentions. Period.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. Just yes, it's very damaging, especially to the person that it's about. And everybody, like we said, when you play that game and one person tells the next person, by the time it gets further down the line, it's totally distorted. And it's really not a true account of whatever transpired. And I always try to put myself in another's shoes and try to do that. But wise advice about the whole topic of gossip and spreading negativity. We don't want to pollute the well. We're talking about polluting the planet and why it won't, why it's not sustaining us in the way that we've become accustomed. But then when you pollute the well or you pollute an environment with negativity, then how can that environment be harmonious? It cannot.
Exactly.
It cannot.
Right.
But, well, and moving on, let us talk about you had several experiences. We have about 15 minutes if you can hang out.
Yes.
You've had several experiences visiting family on higher realms, and since lucid dreams are largely the topic of the book, let's throw out a few experiences for people to hear. I love this stuff.
Well, there was a few of them, actually. The ones that I think are really special to me were to my parents. One was to my father. My father was a victim of a kind of an Alzheimer's situation. It was not exactly Alzheimer's, but pretty much similar.
Dementia or?
Yeah, but
some
severe.
Kind of, oh,
severe,
okay.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
You know, like he would think that people were coming after him and tried to burn all his papers and almost set the apartment on fire. And he would go out with my mother at 3 in the morning in New York City, of all places, and say, we got to go out and find my house. So I'm not in my house, and take her out 3 in the morning. And it's scary.
Yes.
So about 3 months before my father died, I did a journey to my father's spirit because I needed to talk to him. Not as the older, senile person, but as the spirit he was.
So you wanted to talk to him soul to soul?
Yeah.
Basically?
Yeah.
And out-of-body experience, or did you go through the dream state?
I went through the dream state.
Gotcha. I'm with you.
So in my dream, I found myself in the woods with a large deep lake or a pool, and there were rocks. And over the rocks was this beautiful clean water, and there were songs and sounds. It was just gorgeous. It was like a beautiful healing pool of some sort. And I saw a man come into the pool. And the sun was in my eyes, so I couldn't really see much other than the form, and then he'd gotten into the pool. And then I realized it was my dad. And he smiled at me, and he kissed my face, and he held my hands as we sat in the pool. And we began to talk and describe to me what it was like to have severe senility. And what he said was, as a person becomes more senile, a black veil is woven between the spirit and the body. And at first, this veil has a lot of light. And at this point, the person has their wits, and they are in their physical body. As the veil progresses, it becomes darker and less light is allowed in, and the spirit and body begin to separate. And at this point, the spirit will begin to live kind of outside along the physical self, joined by some sort of a cord, sort of like an embryonic cord. And the cord is strong, but as the veil progresses, it begins to shrink and fail. Eventually, this veil is dark and the cord is gone. And at that point, the soul leaves the body. And we spoke of all kinds of things. We forgave each other for anything that we needed to. We told each other how much we loved each other. I thanked him for all the good he'd done. He thanked me for being his daughter. He said he was pleased with me. I'd made him proud. And then we just sat in this pool for quite a while. It was just a beautiful, beautiful experience with my father in this lucid dream state.
Well, I like the way he explained that process and the silver cord. It's very important, and it does diminish. And when did he graduate to the other side?
Well, I would say it was about maybe 8 to 9 months later when he finally did. And I was actually with him when he passed. I was sitting with him at his bedside.
Good. He sounds like a very nice man.
He was a wonderful person. He really was. And then there was also a vision journey to my mother, which really meant a lot to me. My mother also suffered from another form of dementia, but hers had to do with mini strokes in the brain.
Oh.
So basically it robbed of her ability to speak, and then, you know, she became incontinent, and then she was bedridden.
Yes.
It was pretty nasty. And during this period of time when all this was going on, she was about 89 at the time and declining. She fell and broke her hip, and she was rushed to the hospital, and they did surgery, and she fell into a coma.
Oh.
And we weren't sure why. We didn't know if the medications had done this, but the doctors didn't lay out a whole lot of hope. She couldn't swallow, and tests seemed to think she would revive or come back. And this had been going on for weeks and weeks, and my sister and I were trying to figure out, do we tube feed her? What do we do? So given those decisions, I decided to do a vision journey to my mother and find out what was going on and what we should do. And she had a living will, but it really wasn't that specific. So I figured, well, you know, we're going to try to clarify what's going on. So, again, I went into this lucid dreaming state and stilled my mind, and I could finally see my mother. Now, my mother was always very fashionable, and in this case, she was dressed in royal blue with matching shoes and jewelry, and she was always very fashion conscious. So it made all the sense in the world that she'd be fashionable, even in the state beyond life and death. It was so funny. And she was with my father. And my father had recently passed, and they were both in a delicatessen, of all things, in New York City, with my uncle, who had passed, and her parents, who had passed.
Okay.
She'd ordered coffee and a bagel. And I was sitting with them at the table, and I explained the situation with her body, and I asked her, are you ready to go? And she said, no, absolutely not. I've been busy dancing the mambo. And my mother was an avid Latin dancer. She won a lot of awards. So she was busy dancing the mambo, eating her favorite foods and enjoying my freedom. I'm not dying, certainly not now. And I sat at the table for a while and just enjoyed the presence of all the loved ones who had passed.
It's
and
no
then
doubt.
I said, okay, it's time for me to go. And my mother said, I'll be back in 1 week. Do not do anything. A week
to
today.
The feeding. How are you going to feed her?
We didn't. She said she'd be back in a week.
She just said, I'll come back in a week. Okay.
Yeah.
All
so
right.
I said, leave her on the liquids, you know, the IV. Don't feed her. She'll be back. Of course, my sister, like, yeah, right.
Of course.
And, you know,
yeah.
So basically, a week to the day that she said she would be back, my mother came out of a coma. My sister was with her when it happened. My sister had said to my mother, do you want to die? It's time to get up. And all of a sudden, my mother opens her eyes and says, of course I don't want to die.
That's how she came out of the coma?
Yeah.
Oh, your sister wants to flip back into the wall.
I'm sure she did, you know.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So those
open
are important
one eye. Who are you talking to? After a week.
Yeah.
That's something I would do to somebody. Okay, so she came back, and what did she say? Did you show up at the hospital?
Well, I was there. I wasn't there. My sister was there.
Right. But what
I heard about the story secondhand. And I was just really very pleased that she'd come back. And I was just like, oh, neat.
Right.
You know? Cool.
Did you get a chance to whisper to her? Do you remember when I came and visited you?
I don't remember whispering much to her. I do remember saying to her in the dream, okay, now that I know you'll be back, I'm good. We'll wait a week.
But I'm saying, when she came back, did you say, Mom, do you remember when I came to visit you and what you said?
Oh. No, I actually didn't. I didn't. Because at that point, her physical self was not able to communicate. I wasn't sure how much she could or could not understand. But it was still pretty cool.
Well, you got to speak to her authentic self. It's just, yeah, it would be great to say, hey, remember, like, wink.
Yeah, really. I would have loved to, but I guess I didn't think she'd, you know, at least not in her regular state, would be really responsive. Or, you know.
And especially if they're not used to bringing subtle things like that back, maybe
right.
you wouldn't have known how to make sense of it, and you would have been disappointed, so it's probably best to just leave it alone.
Right, I just kind of left it be, but I just thought it was kind of neat.
That is neat. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we get into this stuff, and before long, you have a bag of funnies to share, just all these wonderful experiences and events that take place that just make sense that we are spirit having the human experience and not the other way around. It works
exactly.
really well. Well, before we go, what I'd like to do is I really was impressed on page 69, the message from Creator. I really thought it was beautiful. Would you like to read that for the listeners? And
for some reason, here's my pages. Okay. In the time of awakening, all light workers, there seems to be a parallel awakening of darkness on the planet Earth. And we were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
Everywhere one looks, there is evidence of unrest and strife. And yet, in the middle of this, more and more light workers are awakening to their true selves and remembering their purposes and their contracts here on Earth. My dear ones, remember to hold space of love, light, and healing in these difficult times. The universe is beginning to put into play the birth pangs of a new and great movement of light workers. As darkness descends on this plane, more and more light workers will be put into place around the globe. Some will be right in the middle of the chaos, bringing light, love, healing, and a refuge. Others may be martyred in the process of this change. Some will be sent to regions of safety, pockets of calm in the middle of the storm, to bring about an ultimate plan that the universe has in store for its children. Along with the conflicts among men, there will be more instances of global phenomenons such as earthquakes, floods, severe weather changes, and patterns. Expect more economic and political upheaval in the coming years. Understand that no change, no birth process is ever without pain. One can submit to it in fear or submit to light. Watch what you manifest and remember what you think, what you say affects change on the physical plane. Be vigilant but not fearful. Be full of light and love and continue to move forward. So that was pretty much what was said. There's a little bit more.
That's amazing. Oh, yeah. No, that was perfect. That was perfect. Only to add, the message says that they are very pleased with all light workers and wish to let us know how loved and how very special we all are. And they honor our commitment to our contracts, our earthly contracts, and that they are joyful in our awakening. So it almost chokes me up because it's so validating and comforting to get a message like that. Like, we know how hard it is. We know you're trying, and we're proud of you for your integrity and your commitment to putting the work out there and whatever it is that you're here to do in whatever form that takes. It's beautiful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow.
Thank you. I really appreciate that because, you know, most of the stuff I really, honestly, don't feel like I can take much credit for. All I did was just to be willing to be this empty vessel and let this stuff come through me and write about it in my own way. And the fact that you were so impressed by this, that you loved the writing style, that you felt it was worthwhile to me, That's what I was trying to accomplish, and that makes me very happy.
Yes, we're all in that position. We're all channels. Nothing any of us do is original. You know, we can attest to that. We're just bringing forth whatever is downloaded to us. But when you put out the effort and you commit the time and the energy, the rewards are infinite when we assist spirit in such a way. So bravo to you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I do have someone else on the line. Perhaps they have a question. Would you like me to check?
Sure.
Okay. Area code 905, bringing you on near. Hi, this is Charlotte. Did you have a question or a comment for Robin?
Yeah, I had a question for Robin.
Okay, go right ahead.
Yeah, my name is Dennis, and I'd like to ask you, if people wanted to lucid dream, right, how is it that they can come to do it more fluidly and more like being more consciously aware actually within their dream, that they are actually making decisions in the dreams and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, you know, for me, what I've done is I've done a number of techniques that really help with this process that will probably help people in learning this. First of all, breathing is very important. If any of you are singers, you know about diaphragmatic breathing. So one of the things that's very important to do is get your diaphragmatic breathing going. And the best way I could suggest you do that is take a heavy book and put it on your stomach. And when you breathe, you just imagine that that breath is going all the way into your stomach and you lift that book up. You want to see your stomach going up and down, not your chest going up and down. So that's one way to really start to get into that state. Another thing that I have done is I kind of create my own sacred prayer space. And I would tell you, do that any way that's comfortable for you. And if you're an atheist, you don't have to pray. You can just make an intent that says, I'm in a good space and I'm going to hear this thing. So however you do it is fine. You know, there's no set way that I would tell you other than how I do it, which is a unique way. But, okay, so you do your breathing. And in my head, what I do is I kind of make sure that I'm kind of, I almost see myself in the two places. I see myself as awake and I see myself as sleeping. So I'm kind of like straddling in both worlds. I have my hands on a keyboard so that I can type, and I type without having to look. So if you cannot do that, I would suggest getting yourself a little tape recorder and take your thoughts and speak as you're dreaming, you know, because you're not totally asleep. You will be able to do this. It's not as though you're fast asleep. Now, if you do happen to get fast asleep, just try to be as conscious as you can, and as soon as you can, the minute you wake, have that tape recorder by your bed and speak into it. Those are certain ways that you can do this. There are other ways of doing it. There are different bents for this. There are ways of more or less creating a quiet time where you kind of tighten your muscles and loosen your muscles so you know that you're relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're in that state, you can start the process of asking questions. And don't second-guess your answers. So once you're in that kind of calm state, if you're asking a question and you get an answer, I don't care what it is. If it's allegory, if it doesn't make sense, write it down. Because sooner or later, it will begin to make sense. It may not make sense right away. I've had dreams that make absolutely no sense until later on. And then I figure out what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes practice.
Yes.
It does.
I find. Yeah,
yes.
And I need to ask you, Robin, once you get into that dream state where that you're consciously aware that you are dreaming, okay, and if someone was to have, like, a bad dream or something like that, right, like a nightmare, whatever, but you're consciously aware of it, how is it where that you can take control of your surroundings, of your actions, as opposed to having what's going on around you affect you in such a manner that you don't wish?
Well, actually, to be honest, I've had a couple of nightmares like that, and when I go into this state, I am allowing myself to feel whatever I feel. So if I'm scared or I'm upset, that's part of the process, and I understand that, and I don't let it affect me to the place of I can't function. In other words, it's okay. It's okay to feel that. So if I have a nightmare, it's for a good reason, and I'm going to write down that nightmare, and I'm going to let those feelings flow. I'm not going to try to change them. That's not the point.
Right.
So
I think you're right on target, and I just want to point out that nightmares are designed to get our attention because we are stifling our emotions.
Right.
So it's very important to recognize to the best of your ability. If you want help with it, I'll be starting my dream interpretation segments in a few weeks. But go ahead, Robin. I was enjoying what you were saying.
Yeah, no, I was just saying that you don't necessarily have to control it because once you control that, you're missing the point.
Right, right.
So if you have a dream like that, it's because you need to face something that's causing you angst.
Right.
And you're not willing to face it in your lucid moments awake. It's too scary. So it's okay. You write it down. And then, you know, feel what you feel, and let it sit for a while and see what comes to you about what that means.
Right.
But what I'd like to add something, Robin, and your Dennis, your question was basically how do you improve your state of lucidity? And
right.
basically what I instruct my students to do is, number one, you want to keep a journal by your bed with a pen,
mm-hmm.
ready to write those things down, those impressions, those emotions, no matter how much you remember. Very difficult. You're at a very subtle level. To be honest with you, you're not in your body when you're sleeping,
right.
especially in the dream state. You're out of your body. So what you're basically
right.
having is a spiritual experience, and you're pulling back the memory of it. So you
right.
want to set an intention that says, okay, I'm going to sleep. I will be aware, I will be lucid, I will remember my dreams, and I will write it down
yep.
upon awakening. And this strengthens that muscle. And that's how you, when you first have a dream where you look around and say, oh, I'm dreaming, then you've got it, and then you can continue to do that. Like, for instance, just this morning, I had a very unusual dream. I wanted to see it again, so I replayed it. Because a couple of the elements of the dream were a little weird. I said, well, I want to see that again. What was the importance of this? So I watched that whole sequence over again. And with practice, that's the level you get to.
Yeah, and I've done that too, where I will replay a dream and I'll keep watching it because there's something that needs to be added.
Right,
or there's
right.
something in it that I look and I say, well, what in the world does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask your both of your perspectives on this. the way I kind of like do it is that before I go to sleep, I'll meditate or whatever. I'll sort the day's events out, right, and make sure that my conscious is clear, my subconscious is clear, where that, because I know when I'm going to go to sleep, that the day's events or whatnot, whatever's troubling me, whatever I have, obstacle, whatever I have to overcome, is going to come into my dreams. You know, dreams are a very good learning tool. And I'll clear my subconscious, where that my conscious can be free, you know, in my dream time. I think that's very important. You know, I was just wondering what you thought
Absolutely.
On that.
Absolutely. That's great. Perfect. Perfect.
Well, that way you're not having a dream that's nothing but a hodgepodge of the day's events. It serves no purpose. That's just
right.
Ego static. So that is a permanent clearing out process.
Yeah.
It's just that we only have like 5 minutes, and I didn't want to get into
okay.
that, but I'm glad you brought it up. Yes, you want to clear out the day's events. You want to evacuate your bladder. You want to set the stage for constructive spiritual work throughout
Absolutely.
The time you're sleeping. You know?
Yeah.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Robin. Your last thoughts, and then we really have to go.
No, he's absolutely on target with what he's doing. I
yes.
totally agree. And, yeah, I mean, there is a place and a time to sit here and discuss the how-tos. But what he's saying is important. Yeah, you do want to clear out the muck before you go into this state of
right.
lucid dreaming.
Very important, I feel.
Yes. No, you're doing everything just right.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing to add. Well, Dennis, thank you so much for tuning in and calling in with a question. You've really added to the conversation, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying the show. Thank you very much.
I'm very happy to hear that. Continue to tune in. We're going to get into some really cool stuff in the next few weeks, okay?
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
take care.
Bye-bye. Bye. Wow, Robin, that was a terrific ending to our segment.
Oh, yes.
I
really,
that
was great. I really loved what that guy had to say, and the questions he asked were absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic, and that clearing out process before you go to bed, I mean, if you don't do that, if you don't meditate and kind of rarefy the air, you're just going to have this static thing.
Exactly.
So we want really constructive experiences with spirit when we're dreaming to make the most of it. Our body is resting. You know, if you're waking up too tired, it just means you spend a lot of time on your body. It's okay. But I'll be doing my dream interpretation segments coming up soon. I had so many beautiful opportunities to speak with great people like you and get you on the air. I didn't want to lose the opportunity, so I've basically been focusing on guests and authors like you, Robin, and their books. But in a short time, I'm going to kind of revert back to the original vision for the show and then bring on some special guests and highlight some small businesses and entrepreneurs that I found along the way.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So this has been great. It's hard to hang up when you're so energized. So Maybe I'll just go jogging or something. But I've had I've had a wonderful time. And
yes, me too.
Great
Thank
to,
you so
it's
much.
Great to know you. Ladies and gentlemen, the name of the book is Vision on Fire, A Venture into Lucid Dreaming. Describes Robin's beautiful process. It also has beautiful prayers and poetry, stories, and accounts of experiences in a state of lucid dreaming. Very interesting to read and very poetic in its approach. So, Robin, why don't you give everybody your website address so that they can come and get to know you a little better? And when do you think the second edition of the book with the new title will be available? In the next couple months or so, or what?
I would imagine in the next couple months. I've got a little bit of editing yet to do.
Okay.
Meanwhile, I still have about 20 to 25 versions of the first copy of this book, which is The Heart Song of Anekehi. If someone is interested in this book, they can contact me. I'm offering the book for $15 plus $3 postage and handling. This will be probably a first edition book, so they are limited. The website is http robinlittlefeather, all one word, .wix.com/vision and then a dash on dash fire. I'm also on Facebook, and you can find me there. For emails, if you want to reach me, it's Robin Ann, A-N-N-E, Hannon, H-A-N-N-O-N, @gmail.com. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/visiononfirelucidreams.
Sounds good. We should everybody come hang out on Robin's page. You can come hang out on my page, which is Spiritual Insights. We'd love to hear your thoughts and your experiences. If you would like to share or comment on something that you've experienced and you don't have a lot of people around you to whom you can express these experiences, we have open hearts, open ears, and we'd love to hear it. Robin, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us, your time, your book, and your love of the work that you're doing. I really appreciate spending time with you. You're quite welcome. You are very welcome. I've had a wonderful time talking with you and exploring these. And everyone, get the book. It's a very interesting read and might inspire you to write your own book. That's your own experiences. One never knows. All right, everybody, that's our show for today. We hope you enjoyed everything we discussed. And until next time, everyone, God bless and be at peace.